The remaining 80% is all demos. We've prayed to the gods. Hopefully everything goes well. But because this is all about customer solutions where we've overcome problems, we wanted to make sure that we could pretty much spend the whole time showing you how it works, the challenges that we were faced, and how we overcame them. So the first scenario is I'm going to show you how we can take additional data from external data sources and import it into your Service Manager CMDB, so essentially bypassing the connector framework in Service Manager. Second scenario, Jeff is going to add some complex notifications for a priority one incident that's been raised in Service Manager. Rather than relying on the notifications built into the product, he's going to show how we can add some complexities, work out how the user wants to be notified, whether it's SMS or email. The third scenario, I'm going to go through some complex software installation requests, using Service Manager but relying on runbooks to add maturity and complexity. And then the final scenario is where we're going to archive files that are attached as related items to our work items in Service Manager and move them across to your document management system. We'll have a quick session review and then hopefully we'll have some time left for questions. But what we would like to do is rather than have people ask questions along the way, if you've got Twitter going, use the hashtag for our session. We've got it open up on the desk here. So we'll try and get through as many of those questions as we can at the end. Okay, System Center Service Manager. It's a platform for orchestrating people, process, and technology. And there's a couple of key features I just want to talk on briefly. It's got a number of ITIL processes. It delivers self-service, process automation, and then there's integration capabilities with other tools. Five ITIL processes. We're not going to go into a lot of detail about these, but you'll see us working through the various work items as we get through the scenarios. Now, unlike many other service management tools, Service Manager was built around the CMDB. It's not a module. It's not something we add on after the fact. The whole solution is built around it. It includes our work items, all of our knowledge management, and our configuration items. We have templates. So the templates are important for self-service because the templates we can use include work items to build out our workflow, and we can use that to automatically build our service requests. We have workflow capabilities built in natively, and we also have a service catalog with request offerings that we can make available to our end users. It's got integration through connectors. So what that gives us the capability to do is import data from products like Active Directory, from all of the components of the System Center product, and import them into the CMDB. But it also enables us to connect to Orchestrator and request runbooks to be executed. And finally, it delivers self-service through the self-service portal, which the users can access to initiate service requests, to keep track of exactly what's happening with work items that they might have raised, or to search our knowledge base. We've got email capabilities through a thick client or the email client on your phone, and we've also got the reporting and data warehouse capabilities. So let's talk about the automation that's included in Service Manager and the challenges associated with that. Firstly, the capabilities we have. We have the self-service portal, which our users can use. I've already mentioned that. We have native workflows included in Service Manager, but they do have limitations. I'll mention that in a moment. We have email notification capabilities, so we can use workflows or email subscriptions to deliver those email notifications. And finally, we have system connectors, which enables us to get that data from those external data sources and pull it into the CMDB. So what are the challenges? Firstly, the workflows have limited flexibility. So let me give you a little bit of an example. If we have a user raising an incident, they select a classification category of Microsoft Word. We know that Microsoft Word is supported by our desktop applications team. So we have a workflow that sits there and says, every time a new incident is created, check that classification category. If it's set to Word, send it off to our desktop app team. That's one workflow. We might have another workflow sitting there going, all right, let's check if the classification category is HR, and then it's going to send it off to the HR team. So you can see we're quickly building up a huge number of workflows that we have to maintain, and having all of those workflows on that workflow server adds processor utilization. So our goal is to minimize processor utilization to maximize performance. So we can, with Orchestrator, we can take a lot of that workflow out of Service Manager, move it across to Orchestrator, where we've got a lot more control over what happens. And the system connectors have fixed data imports. So you might have the Active Directory connector deployed. It pulls data from AD about your users, for example, into the CMDB. We can't change what data that imports. So if we go ahead and extend our AD schema, add some new object and new properties to our user object that's related to our organization, we can't modify that AD connector to say, go and pick that up because I want that data in the CMDB as well. But with Orchestrator, we can, and I'm going to show you that in the first scenario. So System Center Orchestrator, how many people have deployed it? How many people are thinking about deploying it? Hopefully, by the end of this session, everyone will. It's an extremely easy product to deploy, and it has so much power when you look at the runbooks. So it's a process automation tool that simplifies data center automation, but it doesn't have to stop there. You can use it for anything. What it'll do is enables you to optimize and extend your existing investments, because at the moment, you've probably got all of these configuration tools in place, and they're essentially siloed. You can't manipulate a different product from one of your configuration tools. Orchestrator enables us to extend and optimize our heterogeneous environments through implementation of things we call the integration packs. Integration packs are product specific and they give us capability to manage a system. If there's not an integration pack available for a product that you want to manage, Microsoft have a solution accelerator called the Orchestrator Integration Toolkit that gives you prescriptive guidance around how you can build them yourself. So you can start to develop integration packs for systems that might not have an integration pack available. Delivers flexible and reliable services through the delivery of flexible process workflows. Process workflows that you can run over and over and over. And it gives you reliability across your tools because you're able to now have a single tool with your runbooks that can perform operations in multiple different systems. I want to create a user in AD. I want to create a home server, a home drive for that user. I want to build it a mailbox. I want to, you know, enable it for Link. All of these things that we can do now directly within a single runbook. Because we're adding all this automation now, you're going to lower your costs, absolutely. And because you're taking all of those, you know, repetitive operational tasks away from your IT team, they can focus on the cool stuff. You know, they can come up with ways to, you know, develop new runbooks, enhance the ones that we've already got in place. And of course, you're going to reduce your error-prone activities. Manual activities, manual processes, no matter how many times you've run them, you will become complacent. And there will be times where you skip key things. You might skip ticking a checkbox or performing a particular activity. So the integration packs and the key capabilities. Firstly, there's integration packs for a large number of products available, both from Microsoft and from other software vendors as well. Do a quick Google around on integration packs and you will find plenty. There's integration packs for all of the System Center components, integration packs for Exchange, for Active Directory. Microsoft even maintained one for VMware, so you can manage your VMware environment directly from within Orchestrator. But there's also a number of built-in activities that you can use, things, you know, like system functions, scheduling and monitoring. Replace those existing scheduled tasks that you have with runbooks and use a scheduled activity to kick it off at the appropriate time. File management, email management, so we can send notifications. Event logging as well. We can monitor the event log to trigger a runbook execution, or we can write data out to the event log, and you'll see a lot of that through our scenarios. In addition, we can run .NET scripts or PowerShell scripts directly within an activity, and you'll see a lot of that today. If you've got an application that supports execution from a command line, we can run command line activities that will go and perform that activity that you need and then continue on in the runbook. We can manipulate data contained within the database, and we can, you know, manipulate things in the file system, create files and folders, delete folders, monitor services. So a couple of tips and best practices, and then we're done with the slides. It'll be all about demos for the rest of this session. Number your folders and your runbooks. What that means is within your folder structure, within the Orchestrator product, make sure you number your folders, and you'll see us use that. So we number the folder at the top of the tree, number one. Underneath that folder, the child folders become 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, you know, and within those folders, we number our runbooks as well. So if it's in the folder 1.2, we start that runbook name 1.2.1. Not such a big deal when working with Orchestrator alone, but when you integrate that with Service Manager, you'll see that this is really important. There's a lot of PowerShell options. Just because there's not an integration pack available for a product you want to manage, if it supports manipulation via PowerShell, use the run.NET script activity, and you'll get a lot of features. A couple of things to keep in mind. That activity in Orchestrator is PowerShell 2.0 and 32-bit. So if you need to run a PowerShell 3.0 script, then there's ways we have to work around that. I'll tell you about that in just a moment. Within your scripts, use the invoke-command commandlet. The reason we do that is because we're offloading that script execution to a remote server. Because if we want to manage Exchange objects or Service Manager objects on the orchestrator box, there's a number of prerequisites we have to do, things we have to install on the orchestrator box just to support those modules. Why not use the invoke command where we offload that request to the remote server that's already got all of them set up? But on the next slide, I'll show you there's a thing you need to keep in mind with that. PowerShell variables, you can take data that's assigned to a PowerShell variable and assign it to a published data variable and use it throughout other activities in your runbook. There's a PowerShell integration pack that includes the invoke command directly, available for free download from CodePlex. Encourage you to take a look at that. I prefer to use the invoke command directly within a run.NET script activity, but it's there if you want. Now for PowerShell 3, what you can do to work around that, if you need a PowerShell 3 script to run on the local box, you can save the script to your file system, use the run program activity, call the PowerShell.exe and reference your script file. That'll enable it to be executed on your local box using PowerShell 3 that's installed locally. Little trick, a lot of people don't know this, but you can actually adjust the runbook job concurrency as well. When a runbook executes, we can only run one instance of that runbook at a time by default. But simply on the properties of the runbook, we can adjust that concurrency so we can run them in parallel. Include logging and rollback. Logging's important. You'll see in our runbooks, we regularly write to the event log. We're writing data out that we might use as part of our troubleshooting process or just for further reference later down the track. So make sure you include logging. It's extremely simple to add and remove without affecting the runbook. And if you've got a complex runbook, it might be a provisioning runbook, make sure you include some rollback capabilities. If we're halfway through a provisioning process and that runbook crashes, we're at an unknown state. We have to go and manually work out what things we need to change to roll it back to a known state. If we include rollback capabilities, we work out that the runbook's failed, it knows what's already been completed, so we can clean up after ourselves. So once we work out why it failed in the first place, we can run it again, and then it's going to go through and complete successfully. The final tip, color your links. You'll see in the runbooks there's ends up being a lot of links when you have a lot of activities. We can have properties on those links. So we might have a condition on a link that says only proceed if the last step was successful, or only proceed if this user has this property set. But just looking at a runbook, you don't know which ones have criteria or filters set on them. If you color your links, you do. We use red for a failed event, green for a success event, or orange if there's just some criteria that we need to be aware of. Really easy. This next slide, I'm not going to go through it. It's purely here for reference for you later on. We're going to talk about how you can catch errors using the invoke command throughout the session. I just purely wanted an example in the slide deck that you can come back to later and refer to. So with that, that's all the slides done. So now it's all about the demos. The first one is where we're going to import data from a data source, which is our HR system. We're going to get my payroll number and Jeff's payroll number, and we're going to pull it into the CMDB, and we're going to relate it to our user object. So setting the scene for scenario one, the challenges is if we want to import data from external data sources, it's difficult. The connectors already, you know, deployed within Service Manager are fixed, so we can't adjust what they can import. Sure, we've got the CSV connector, but the CSV connector requires us to firstly populate a CSV manually. We need to build a template that says, all right, map this field in the CSV to this field in a particular CI in the CMDB. And then every time we want it to run, we have to run it manually. So not very flexible. So our solution here around the HR system is we're going to extend the user class, add a new property to our user object in the CMDB called payroll number. And what we're going to do is extend the form so you can see that in the console. And then finally, we've got a runbook that's actually going to go and perform the import of that data for us. All right, let's take a look. Okay, so here I am in my Service Manager console, and I'm in my users view within the configuration items workspace. I'm going to pick on Jeff today.
Be nice.
I'll try. Here we go. So here's Jeff's user object. We'll open that up. What you're going to see when that loads up is we'll see that Jeff has a payroll number registered against his user, and we've also extended the form so you can see the payroll number here when we open up the user form. So that's important. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to jump into our HR database. You can see we've only got three records in there. There's myself, Jeff and Noel. What I might do, I'm a nice guy, I'm going to get my payroll number. I'm going to make Jeff that same payroll number for Jeff.
Can you do that the other way?
Really? You don't trust me?
No.
All right. Here. I'll give you something different. So we've set a payroll number for Jeff. 987654. What I want to do now is have a runbook that gets that data and imports it into the CMDB for me. So let's have a look in Orchestrator. Here's a simple runbook that's going to do that. I'll take you through it and then we'll execute it. Firstly, we've got a query database activity. Here, I'm connecting to that SQL database, HRDB, and I'm going to run a query called select star from payroll details. And what that's going to do is that's going to return me an array, and each element in the array is going to be a row from within that table. So that's going to be things like Jeff's username, his first and last name, and his payroll number. Then what we're going to do is we need to split that up because we're going to, this element in the array is going to be separated by semicolons. We need to split that up and assign them to PowerShell variables. So you can see I've taken that line and I've performed a split on the semicolon. And what I've done is I've said the first element in that array, assign it to the username PowerShell variable. The fourth element in that array, assign it to the payroll number variable. Now, I mentioned earlier about using PowerShell variables and published data variables in Orchestrator. So you can see we've got published data here, where I can take those PowerShell variables, payroll number, and now make it a published data variable. So I can reference that in other activities within the runbook. All of the activities have access to published data. So it's important that we can reuse that. So as an example, where we're writing out some data to the event log here, you can see I've said this runbook's running, username, payroll number, and this is where we've got the data from, the username from that extract data from array activity. So what are we going to do with that? Firstly, we're going to go and get all of the users from the CMDB that have a username contained within our HR database. Really simple. Then what we're going to do is use this compare values activity. And a lot of people don't know about this, but it's a really powerful activity and really simple to use. We open it up. What it'll do is it'll compare two values. So I'm comparing the payroll number that's come from the database with the payroll number that we've got from the CMDB that's already registered for all the users, including Jeff, and I'm comparing them. If they're the same, we'll get a true comparison result. If they're different, we'll get a false comparison result. So you can see we've colored our link because we've got a filter on this particular link. So what I'm saying here is if the comparison result from that activity check payroll number is correct, if it equals false, then we actually need to go and update it. The reason we're doing that, we don't want to just update everything, we only want to update the ones that have changed. So let's quickly run it. So it's underway. Now what we will see is we'll see each user get processed, and then we'll only see Jeff's account get updated. So I'll show you just as part of the logging in the database here. You can see here we're working through the runbook and the users. I'm processing myself, processing Jeff's account, processing Noel's account, and then finally, it will have completed and only updated Jeff's account. So you can see his was the only one where the payroll number changed. So let's hop back in, and I'll show you, first of all, that I'm not lying to you. I wouldn't do that.
I was going to check anyway.
And you'll see Jeff's payroll number, once the form's completed loading, will be now 987654. So even though I ran that runbook manually, it's extremely easy for me to add a scheduled activity in the front of that. So I could come up to my scheduling, monitor date and time, drag that activity in the front and tell it to run every night or run every hour, whatever your needs are. So now you don't have to use just the built-in activity. So that's using the built-in activities. But this one here, I'm doing the exact same thing using PowerShell. So I'll open up this update payroll number activity. I'll try and make that a bit bigger for you to read. What you'll see here is we're doing pretty much the same thing. We're going to connect to our Service Manager server. We're going to start up a session. Username and payroll number are in there. We're going through and getting our users. We're checking that the payroll numbers are the same. If they're not the same, we're going to update the user. Pretty easy. Now that slide I put up on the screen a moment ago was all about using the invoke commandlet with catching errors. Because if we don't catch errors, this script is executing on our remote server. We don't know, in fact, that anything's gone wrong. So I'll show you how that works. Here we're going to invoke command on a remote server. It's going to cause an error, but we're not going to know about it. And that's because I'm only using the invoke command. So in here, you'll see there's no try and there's no catch. But what I've done is I've said the username is I don't exist, because when we're looking that up in the CMDB, it should fail because it's not there. So let me run that and I'll show you how that fails, or how it should fail, but it returns success. And then what we're going to do is we're actually going to go and run the second one where I catch it, and I'll show you the difference. I'll just take a moment to run. Okay, that's done. We can come across to our log history. Open that up. Everything was successful, but the user's not there. So why was it successful? We need to know it failed. So let's run the second one. And again, you can get this data straight off that slide I put there as an example for you. So here, what we're doing is, rather than just starting off with the invoke, we're going to wrap it up in a try. So we're going to try the script. If there's any errors, we're going to catch them. And if we get any errors, we're going to throw an exception within Orchestrator. So let's run that. Exact same script. The user we're looking for is I don't exist. And we'll run that. Again, we can see it's in progress. A little play icon on the runbook up the top. It's going to take a moment. And that's complete. So log history, we can see this time the runbook had a warning. If we open it up, the update payroll number in CMDB actually failed, and we can see the reason it failed was it couldn't find the object within Service Manager. So you can see really important to catch any time you're using the invoke command. So what we've been able to show you here is that Orchestrator combined with Service Manager can help you work around a challenge where you want to get that data from your remote system and pull that back into the CMDB. So what I want to do now is hand over to Jeff and let him walk you through a complex notification scenario for Priority 1 incidents.
Thanks, Justin. Good afternoon, all. Let's have a look at scenario 2, notification for a P1 incident. Firstly, what's the standard process for a P1 being logged? So someone's going to call the service desk, they're going to log the call, put it all down, they're going to identify it's a P1 and identify a support group, then they'll ring the on-call support person to get them onto it as soon as possible so they don't lose any time in their SLA. It's fair enough, but what about SCOM? I regularly configure SCOM to put alerts directly into Service Manager. I can put a P1 into the Wintel or the network team. It's not going to go through the service desk. How do we alert them there's a P1 in their queue? Because you really need to know about it fairly quickly with some of the SLAs you see around. Okay, so what are our challenges? Sorry. There's no native integration, SMS integration in Service Manager. You can send emails, but you can't actually send an SMS. Probably the bigger one is there's no method of identifying an on-call staff. You can send it to a group quite easily, but how do you send it to a specific user? You don't really want to send an SMS to an entire group. 2 o'clock in the morning, do you want to get an email when someone else is on call? An SMS when someone else is on call? Multiple workflows and subscriptions. So to do this through Service Manager, you'd have to have a workflow for a P1 for each support group. You'd have to somehow identify the user, and then you could send an email out. So if you had an email to SMS service, that'd work. You need a number of services, you need a number of workflows. So you'd have a workflow for Wintel, a workflow for networks, example. Subscriptions would be similar. You can catch P1s with subscriptions, but you'd have to do the same thing. You'd have to identify a user to send it to. How do you identify who's on call? How do you get a SMS sent to them? And you can send it to everyone, but you'd also require multiple. So it's not as flexible as we would like it, so we're going to try and do something else. So what we're going to do, we're going to create a custom configuration item to identify the on-call staff. Then we're going to use Orchestrator to locate the on-call staff and send a notification. So let's jump over into the demo. Thank you. Awesome. So we're in the Service Manager console. Luckily, we've got no P1s at the moment, which is the way I like it. But I'm going to create some. So this is just a PowerShell script which uses SMlets to create incidents, really. I'm just using the SCSM incident commandlet to do it. It's very quick. The only problem is it sometimes puts a bit of pressure on the Service Manager server because it's just dumping it straight into the database. And it sometimes does this. Just give me a sec for this to come open. Okay, so what it's going to give us is a base call. It's assigned to a support group. It's set at priority one. There's no one assigned to it, but it's there. It's a P1 and it's in the support group. So it's not going to go through the service desk. Going to change that and see if that helps. Okay, while we wait for this to come up, I'm actually going to go and have a look at the runbook. So this is the runbook we're going to use to monitor. We've got a monitor object, so we're monitoring. Okay, that's actually just started, even though you can't see it in the console. We've got a monitoring object, so, and I've just been sent an email telling me I've been assigned a call, which is very, very quick. So we're monitoring Service Manager for an incident. We're looking for any new items, and they have to be a priority one. So anything that matches that criteria will be sent through this runbook. When it does that, it also gets all the information. It does a get object about it as well, so you have all the information at your hands to use. Now, we use a tiered support group structure. So, for example, we have Tier 2 Wintel, Tier 3 Wintel, Tier 2 Network Communications, Tier 3. So I've just done a little bit of basically pattern mapping to get everything with network communications in it will go to Network Communications on call, just so I can identify a support group that I can send to the one network support team or the one Wintel team on call stuff, sorry. So cancel that. So I've mapped them to support group. That means I can work out which support group I need. This one is going to get on-call contact details. So I'm looking for a domain or user group in Service Manager. I'm looking for a display name that equals support group from map published data. Okay, so let's go and have a look at what that is. So you're looking at this one, you can see I've actually already been assigned. And if I refresh it again, you'll probably see Justin being assigned to the network. If it works, I'll come back to that. So looking in users again, so when I said create a custom item, all I'm doing is creating a new user, an internal user in Service Manager, to host a little bit of information that I can go look for and then utilize that information. Sorry, just have to wait for a sec while users load. Demo gods, what are you doing? So, in a nutshell, I've created a user called, I basically use a support group name, so it's Wintel or Network Communications, and I've put a surname as on call. So I can go and find that. So I can go and find that in here and see what the information that can give me. Okay, I'm going to go Wintel because Wintel is the one we're going to be using for this demonstration. Open this guy up and we'll see I've got Wintel as the first name, so that matches the support group I've mapped to. OnCall is a surname, so I can identify it in the group. And then I've got two little bits of information. I've got title and company. So title is J.E. Cook. So J.E. Cook happens to be my SAM account name because I'm on call for Wintel at the moment. And SMS is basically going to tell the system that I want an SMS sent to me when a P1 call is logged. So not much information in there. Now, I know I could have probably created a custom class and done a few things to not use a user, but I've got the user ability, it's got lots of properties I can use. I'm quite happy to use that for this scenario. If you had a user called with a surname of on call, you might want to use a different last name, but I don't think that's going to happen that often. Okay, so we know what's going on there now. We now have J.E. Cook. We're going to go to AD to grab his details. So filtering, SAM account equals title from get on call contact details. The reason I'm using AD rather than Service Manager, so there's a sync period from, so Service Manager goes to AD, syncs the data down. So there's always going to be a delay there. I'd prefer to go to the single point of truth and use AD to get the information rather than risk that Service Manager is slightly behind. May not be a huge thing in this scenario, but I like the idea of going to the source of truth. So I've got that information now. So I have every bit of information about the AD object. Okay, I'm going to log to the event viewer as we do. I'm not going to show you that because you've seen that before. I'm going to send them an email. So I'm going to send them an email because I think you're on call, you're generally going to have a smartphone, you'll be able to get your email on your phone anyway. Send them a text, that'll wake them up, then they can look at their email and pull a much richer description of what's going on out of there. So you might want to send them a affected user phone number or some sort of information like that so they can get straight onto the case. I'm going to send, the subject will be P1 and the ID number has been logged. Email comes from the AD user, and this is obviously just a very small list at the moment, but I have a new P1 has been logged to your team, call ID is this, description equals this. As I mentioned, anything you can grab out of the information we have, you can put into this call, put into this email. So that's going to send it off, then I'm going to update the P1 call to basically say that I have done that. Now, we're going to go down the next stream now, get SMS detail, we're going to look for SC object GUID from get on call contact details. Now, that actually looks remarkably familiar to this one here. and it is exactly the same thing. The reason I'm doing it again is because I want to filter on this, on the orange line. I want to be able to go, if company equals SMS, I want you to keep going. So as you can see, I can only go back one in the link. So I've had to do the entire process again to identify that user and get all the information so I can filter by it. So as you can guess, I've got the link there. It's filtered, it's orange, so you know it's doing something. Then I've got send SMS. So once again, PowerShell is our friend. I'm literally just using an invoke web command, web request, sorry. It's exactly the same format as Justin's already explained. I'm just pulling out the number from the get on call user details from AD and grabbing the ID from service manager. So it's a very, very short email. And it's a very, very short SMS, but it's all they really need. Now, I'm actually not going to do that now because I don't want to leave my phone on during the presentation. And I've taken my password out of the API, so you can't steal it out of the, can't take it out of the email. But it does work, and it is a valid option. There's other options such as email to SMS services. Cisco has the ability to send SMSs from their switches or routers. So that does work, and that works through it. So it's really just to illustrate that you can actually use command lines to do it, and you can do anything you like. So cancel out that. Once again, log, update the P1, and then send it, update the log saying I've sent an SMS. Last one is get assigned user. So what we're doing is we're going to search service manager for the object of the AD user we've grabbed for the on-call. So we're using DN from AD to identify the service manager user. Cancel that. And what we're going to do with that is we're going to create a relationship between them and the actual call so they get assigned to it. That way we're assigning them to the call so they own it. So just quickly, we've found a P1, we've mapped the support group. Using that, we've grabbed an object from the configuration items. We've then grabbed our on-call from that, and we've done email, send an SMS, and then assign the user the call. Looking at this against the workflow subscriptions, we've done a significant amount more than the workflow subscription could do, and we've actually decreased the load on the server, on the workflow server, by doing it all on Orchestrator with a single runbook. One other thing, it's very flexible. Any tool you can use, so PowerShell, command line, anything you can run through a .NET script, for example, you can do through this methodology. For those who know Service Manager fairly well, you'll know that because I've just been assigned, I'll also get an email from Service Manager saying you've been assigned. I do like to keep this one here, basically because you can send a much richer message out, and it's not going to be the generic you have been assigned to this call, but that's entirely up to you. As demonstrated, you can choose which path it's going down by filtering the lines. I was also thinking it's a new process. We need people to, you know, keep updating the service manager objects so the right person's on call. So let's send an email out or a SMS out at 1:30 every day, and we'll see if that will basically remind them to update their on call status. So I've got a scheduled task, runs at 2:15 every day, which I think I just got that email. And it's basically going to, at 2:15 every day, it'll go and get every user with a display name of on call, display name that contains on call. Once again, if you've got a user with the surname of on call in your area, probably don't want to use that value. That will pass all the on call users through this process. So we're going to get the on call user, send an email, log an event, get SMS details, choose whether we send them an email or not. I don't think there's a real problem sending an email at, you know, 1:30, 2:15 in the afternoon, and then log the event. So let's have a quick look. So look at this. This is the original P1's been logged, the email that was sent out. New P1 has been logged to your team. Call is that, description is that. So that's straight out of the call. And then this is the on-call roster reminder, which I've just got. So, hey Jeff, you're currently assigned to the on-call user for Wintel on-call. Could you please update on-call details if required? One other thing I'm going to say before I hand back to Justin. I'm currently using Service Manager object and an AD object. So they're easy to use, they're there. There's no reason you couldn't use a web service, a database, a spreadsheet, use straight AD. Anything you can grab to, anything you can query, you can use in here to identify your on-call user. So one of the main things we're looking at is flexibility. You can look at anything you want to try and get, as long as the information's there, you can go and get it, pull it in, and do a number of tasks from it. The other main takeaway is performance increase. So you're running one runbook against possibly 8 or 9 workflows and subscriptions, and you're taking load off the workflow server, which is always a good thing in Service Manager. Thanks, Justin. Back to you.
Thanks, mate.
A lot of people don't realise that Service Manager doesn't have that native SMS capability, and we do get asked for it a lot, particularly if you want to have some notifications that are specifically related to incidents raised for your messaging system that might be unable to deliver messages at that point in time. So having a backup solution through Orchestrator is extremely powerful. So the next scenario I want to walk you through is delivering complex software installation requests. Who makes self-service software installs available to their end users? Not a lot. Is there a reason behind the not making that available? Is it not complex enough? You're difficult to work out which applications we want our users to install. We don't have review activities. That's typically the things that we hear. So let's set the scene for scenario three. The challenges with a lot of the tools, you know, Config Manager has the application catalog. The problem with that is it's great if you just want to install an application, make a list available to your users, they can go and install. As soon as you want to throw approvals into the mix, or even some complexity around who should be the approver, it just can't be done. There is the Advanced Application Approval Workflow Solution Accelerator, but again, it's not nearly as flexible as the solution that I'm going to walk you through in a moment. So how do we deploy our apps? Hopefully with Config Manager. So we're going to utilize Config Manager to deploy the apps, but we're going to set it up so that Config Manager can take control. Your apps may require approval. Some will cost us money, so we need to make sure we've got the licenses available, and maybe you need to make the approvers or the users aware of what the cost impact is going to be. And the review activities in Service Manager have fixed members, so you can build a list of reviewers, but anytime you want to change that, you need to go into the service request template, into the review activity, make that change. That can be time-consuming and painful, and it's not flexible, it's not dynamic. So our solution is we've built a published software custom class that's available in Service Manager. So this gives you a number of properties associated with that object specifically related to applications. And with that, we've also then got Orchestrator runbooks that are going to deliver you flexibility. So let me show you how it works. All right, the first thing I want to do is I'm in the Service Manager console here. You can see we've got the published software view. So this is showing me all the published software objects for that specific published software class. We'll open up Visio, just as a sample. We'll come down and have a look at the properties of that. And you'll see the software vendor is Microsoft. The software title is Visio Pro 2013. And you'll see we've got a property there called Mapped AD Group. We're using that as the way we populate our collection, so part of the membership rule. So as soon as we put a user or a computer in that AD group, Config Manager is going to take control and deliver that application to that user or that computer. We've got a property here that says whether that application actually requires approval. If I turn that on, like I have there, it's going to have the runbook enable the review activity and populate it with reviewers based on what I define. If I set that to false, it's actually going to go back into the template and disable the review activity. So I'll show you that in a sec. We can put some cost in there so that the approver, or we could make that available to the end user as well. And we can say whether we're going to enable that application or not. Now that's important because we want to be able to leave that software configuration item in the CMDB, but we might want to take it out of service for a little while. So if I set that to false, the user won't see it in the self-service portal, and I can perform maintenance on the application or just take it out of service, flick it back to true, and bang, it's back ready to go again. Let's go and actually execute a couple of requests. So here's our self-service portal. I'm going to jump into the software requests. What I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to make a request for a software title that requires approval, and then I'm going to make a request for one that doesn't require approval. That way, you'll be able to see how the runbook operates in the two different scenarios. All right, the first one we'll do, Visio Pro. You can see here it requires approval. I might not want to publish that. I can change that. It's just part of the view. The next thing I'm going to do is I need a justification as to why I need it. I need this for TechEd. Click Next, and then we'll submit that. Now that's going to create me the service request, return the ID to the self-service portal, and the installation process is going to get underway. Let's go back and we'll quickly submit another request. But this time we're going to do it for an app that doesn't require approval. Any Config Manager admins in the room? Couple? Well, you'll know this one. We're going to select CM Trace. We've set the approval on this to false. So why do I need that? Everyone needs it. All right, so now we've submitted that. It's going to create me a second service request, and we'll go and take a look at them. Hop into the Service Manager console, into our work items, and then we'll go and have a look at our service requests. Right. In our all open service requests, you'll see we've got two software installation requests now, but you know what? That's not very user-friendly. We don't know which service request is associated with which application install request. So I know based on the number, you know, the first ID is going to obviously be Visio, but the first activity or one of the first activities of our runbook is to actually come back and update the title so it's a little bit more user-friendly and helps us understand which request is associated with which application. You could do anything there. You could put the user in there. Whatever properties are associated, you could insert in the title if you wish. So I'll come across to related items, and you'll see in our related CIs, there's Visio Pro. So that's the published software class that I showed you a moment ago. Come into our activities, and these are the three activities that are associated with this request, and they have come from the service request template. I'll jump into the review activity before the runbook gets too far along and show you first of all, that there's no reviewers. So what we're going to do, the runbook's going to work out who should be the reviewer, and it's going to associate those reviewers with this request. We've also set the threshold extremely low to 5%. So that means in normal situations, unless we've got more than 20 approvers, only one user is going to need to approve that. I'll show you quickly the runbook automation activity, and then we're going to jump into Orchestrator and see what's happening behind the scenes. So first of all, under the runbook tab, you will see the runbook name, and this is where the numbering becomes important. Because if I look at that, I might have thousands of runbooks in Orchestrator and hundreds of folders. How do I know where it exists? By the numbering system that we use, it makes it a lot easier to find that. I know that that is the fourth runbook sitting in the folder 1.7. You can see we're passing across some data to it. We're passing it the service request ID. Using the mapping property, I've mapped it to that work item ID, so that's dynamic and passed across to Orchestrator. We've got the review activity title. So you can see that is a perfect match of that review activity. That's important if we've got multiple review activities within the workflow. In this instance, we've only got one, but there will be times when you need multiple approval steps throughout the workflow. So here we can deliver that capability. And then this is the AD group. So we're using a group in this scenario. Anybody in the application approvers group becomes an approver for that software installation request. So before we get into Orchestrator, just let me quickly show you that group. Okay, under groups, we have application approvers, and we have four members of this group. So we're going to use those four users as our approvers, because we've set it to 5% as the approval percentage, only one user is going to need to approve that. Now, so that I prove I'm not lying, we're going to open the CM Trace group, and I'll show you that there's no members associated with that group, and also the Visio group, and there will be no members associated with that group. All right, into runbooks. So, in our software installation runbooks, folder 1.7, we're going to go to 1.7.4. Set up the software install approval. The first step, the initialized data step in here, is what Service Manager is going to execute first of all, and there's those three same properties that we're going to pass across to make sure the execution starts and can complete successfully. Then what we're going to do, we're going to get the service request from Service Manager, and we're going to get the published software title that is related, that I showed you was related to that work item. You can see we're using colored links, as we mentioned in the best practices, because we know there's some criteria or some filters associated with that. I'll open that up. So firstly, get published software activity was successful. We need to make sure that it was able to pull data from Service Manager. And then the exclude, I only want the process to flow this way if approval equals false, because we want to go ahead and skip that review activity in our workflow. So the other way is if the approval equals true, then we need to do this. So essentially we're going to skip it if it doesn't require approval. If it does require approval, we're going to get the group from AD. We're going to get the members of that group. We're going to get them all out of the CMDB and we're going to relate them to that review activity. Okay. So let's jump to our log history and we'll see that that's completed twice. So once for the Visio and once for CM Trace. So the 226, you'll see that it's gone through and it's used that criteria, worked out that I need approval on that, and it's gone and got all the users and related them to that review activity. The next one was for CM Trace. It doesn't need approval, so it's just gone and skipped it, completely automated. So let's jump into Service Manager and we'll take a look at that. So here's our two. If I refresh that, firstly, the titles should have updated. So now I'll be able to clearly see which service request is related to which product. We'll go into Visio Pro first of all, because that's got the approval step. I'm going to approve it. That will then move on in the workflow and it'll perform, add the user to the group so Config Manager can take control. So come to our activities. We'll see the first RumbleCore automation activity has completed successfully. We'll open up the approval step. You'll see our four reviewers have been added. And because we set that threshold to 5%, you'll see only one out of the four need to approve it. I'm going to approve it as admin. I'm an admin in the system. Approved. We'll close that down. And that is then going to be approved. So let's have a look at the CM Trace one, because that should have proceeded. I will defend Service Manager. We're running a lot of VMs on this one particular host. Now, when I jump across to the activities here, I'm going to show you that the review activity has actually changed color, and you'll see that it has been skipped. So we can see it's changed color, and it's got a little skip arrow on top. If I open it up, you'll see it doesn't have any reviewers associated with it, and the status of it is in fact skipped as well. So what we'll do now is I'll go and show you the last step of this process where it's actually run the runbook to add the user to the group, and I'll show you that it's been added. So the first one in here, 231, that was for CM Trace. Because it didn't require approval, it wasn't waiting for me to approve it, it's gone through and actually completed. You can see that the second one, because we just approved it, is now in progress. And momentarily, that one is also going to complete. And then we'll have our user in the Visio group. So once that's happened, you know, Config Manager, Delta Discovery will work out that group membership has changed, import those changes, the incremental updates on your collections will kick in, collection membership will update. Next time the machine gets policy, we've got the software. So we'll have a look at the log history. That second one's completed successfully. Back into AD, Visio Pro, James Brown, who we logged into the portal as, has been added to that group. And same with CM Trace. So you can see there we've been able to deliver a really complex self-service solution without having to rely on things like the Config Manager app catalog. Because a lot of people want their users to go to the same self-service portal for all their requests, rather than having to jump to the Config Manager app catalog for software install requests and then back to Service Manager for different requests, get them all to the one location, and you can get a lot of maturity utilizing both of those tools.
Thank you kindly. So let's look at scenario four, archiving attached files from Service Manager. So I've got a couple of questions first. Who here has database grooming turned on in Service Manager? Hands up, yep, a few. Okay, you probably should have if you've got Service Manager, it's very important for performance. Does anyone attach documents to Service Manager objects? So change requests, service requests, anything like that? A few hands up in the room. Does anyone need to keep these documents for any amount of time? So do you need to keep them for 5 years, 10 years, anything like that for historical purposes? Some of theirs helping me out. That's good, thank you. So what are our challenges? Why I'm asking you these questions? Firstly, attachments aren't synced to the data warehouse. And so when the database is groomed, they're actually deleted. So database grooming about a year for service request change request, which are probably the main ones for this. So they're deleted after a year of being completed or being completed. So if you need to keep them for a certain amount of time, that's a bit of a problem. Grooming is required. If you don't groom your databases, they will get very large and performance will suffer dramatically. And attachments may be required to be available for a period of years. I generally think about scanned approvals or some sort of proof of action or something needs to be scanned and kept. Also, attachments aren't stored in the file system. They're actually a database blob, so you can't just back up a file system and expect to get them back later. So there's a couple of challenges. So what can we do about that? We could do a process-based approach. So we could get people to save their documents into a document management system first, SharePoint or FileShare, whichever, just so it's out there, and then you put a link into the service manager object. Sorry about that. That would be good. It'd be changing the way we approach things, and you know, Service Manager has the add attachments feature, so it's nice to use it. Highly unrecommended is to turn off database grooming. Please don't do it. It would actually meet your requirement by not deleting objects, but your database would get huge and your performance would suffer significantly, as probably don't want to happen. And the other one is, let's see what we can do with Orchestrator. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create some custom properties for tracking the archiving process, and then I'm going to create an Orchestrator runbook, which is going to monitor the changes, service request IRs, find them. If they've got attachments, it'll go and archive them, and then I'm going to go and fill in some data, so fill in those properties, so in the forms or in the views, I can track whether they've been archived and where they've been put. Okay, let's get over to the demonstration. Alrighty then, so before we do that, I'm just going to jump into... I'm going to focus on change requests for this. Service request is very similar. IRs are slightly different, but pretty much the same. So I'm just going to jump in, have a quick look. I've created a couple of change requests, which I'm going to close out. As I mentioned, I'm going to do this when they have completed. So I've got with attachments, just to keep it simple, related items, I have an attachment down here. I am an attachment. So in activities, I've got a single approval. I really just want this to wait until I approve it so you can see what's going to happen. So I'm just going to jump in there and approve that. Alrighty then. Okay, I'm going to exit out of that one. And I'm actually going to close the other one as well. So this one doesn't have any attachments. So there's nothing there, so I'll also go and approve that one. Alrighty then, so as with Service Manager, once they're approved, there's only one activity, so they will flow through and become completed. So let's have a look at, okay, one other thing. In this view, you will notice that I have added criteria at the end, so added views for documents attached and archive location. So when I have run the process on them, I can just come back to the view and see if, one, this process happened and where the files are. And it's also available inside the document, which I'll show you, inside the form, which I'll show you in a little bit. So let's go and have a look at the runbook that's going to do this. So the monitoring P1 calls we've had a look at. So we've got three up here. We've got monitoring IR. So, monitoring incidents. We've got monitoring service requests and we've got monitoring CRs. Now, you'll notice they're all pretty much exactly the same, and they are. The only difference is that when you're using Service Manager, you have to monitor a specific class. You can't just monitor everything. So each one is monitoring. This one's change, SR is for service request, and IR is for incidents. So I have to have three separate runbooks to monitor. So I monitor anything that's updated and anything that has a status that equals completed. So anytime it moves to completed, it's going to kick off this runbook. Once again, when you use the monitor task, it's going to get all the information about the object when it's kicked off. We're going to log to the event viewer, as we always do. I'm going to go and get CR attachments. So I'm going to get the relationship between the change request and any attachments. I'm going to use the GUID from the object we found from monitor, and the class I'm looking for is file attachments. That all makes sense. Then, I don't know if you've seen this one before, but this is invoke another runbook. So I've got CR invoke, and I've got the runbook name. Once again, we're using the numbers, which makes life a little bit easier. What am I passing? The runbook path is there, so when you map it, you can basically work through the folder structure to get there. I'm passing parent ID, which is the GUID of the change request. The number of attachments, so how many attachments were actually found. Object name, which is the CR number. The attachment ID, which is the GUID of the attachments we found. And then what path I want to put it in. So where I actually want to put it out. So I'm just going to use a file system. I'm not going to use SharePoint or anything like that. So I'm just going to a folder share. Okay, so that's going to call 411 common archive. So I've got four common runbooks, SCSM, and common 411 common archive attachments. So another small runbook. So initialize data. I'm not going to go through these because we just have. So I pass them through. Now this runbook has them. I've got logging. I've got a green and a red. So let's have a look at green first. Basically, if number of attachments does not equal zero, I'm going to go this way. So if there is an attachment there, I'm going to go down this path. Fairly simple. I'm going to create a folder. It's going to be based on the archive path and the object name. So it'll be archive path / CR number, just to break them up. And then I'm going to run some PowerShell. Let's make it a little bit bigger. Okay, so the structure's the same as Justin has described. I'm not going to go through that. The variables I'm pulling out are attachment ID, parent ID, and folder path. As I mentioned, it's a database blob, so I've got to pull it out of the database, and then I'm going to write it out to a file in that folder, and then I'm going to update some properties. So listen, I'm not going to go through the actual script I've used because it's probably not relevant to this, but it's just a way to pull a file out of a database, and then I'm going to update some properties. I'll explain the update properties in a second. And that has gone through, and it's basically archived the file, put it in a folder, and told the object that it has been archived. Okay, so this one is red. Its number of attachments equals zero. So if there are no attachments, I'll go this way. So you're probably asking, why didn't I just stop the attachment? If there's no attachments, why did I bother coming to this runbook? I really want to mark them if they've been scanned and don't have an attachment as well. So I don't just want to say, yes, you've got an attachment, here they are. I want to say, no, you don't have any attachments, and you're there. So I want to basically make sure there's a full recording of what's going on. But that's exactly the same. Doesn't have the database. Doesn't have the database section, but that's fine. So basically, all the same stuff. I'm just marking the change request. I'm not touching anything else. So to explain this a little bit, for anyone who's used SEMlets before, generally you have to set your class and then go and search for something. So you go and find your class and you set it, and then you go and you search for something inside SEMlets, inside Service Manager. Takes a lot of work and is very specific to your class. I'm actually using the GUIDs of the objects. So because I pulled this out of Orchestrator, I can just grab the GUID of the object and pass that straight in, and then I don't have to search for anything. I just go and find the GUID I want and do what I want to it. So I've got documents attached and archive location. I'm setting these as false and no documents are attached because there are no documents attached. In the other one, I'm setting them as true and the archive path. One other thing to pick up out of this is for me to use this for all types, I have to extend the class of the of whatever type I'm doing, so CR, SR, example, etc. So I have to use exactly the same property in all of the classes, otherwise this won't work. Well, it will work for most, but it won't work if you haven't used the same name. So you'd have to have a different one for each class, which is doable, but I think it's easier just to have a single bit of code rather than lots and lots of different areas. Okay, so we've identified them back here. We've monitored them, we found them, we've got the attachments, we've sent them to the other runbook. All three are using exactly the same runbook. If you, for example, wanted to run this as a runbook automation activity, we can do that too. So here's one I created earlier. Sorry, I couldn't help it. Archive attachments as a runbook activity. Initialize data, the ID, which will be the CR ID and the attachment path. So you'd set that where you set your runbook activity in Service Manager. A little bit of mapping, so I'm grabbing the type by searching CR star, SR star. Obviously, you don't set an activity in a instance, so you'd have to monitor that, but you could put these in, and then you map to CR and SR. And then, as you'd expect, orange is putting a criteria on the link, so this way will be SRs, and the rest of it looks pretty much exactly the same as the other one. So we've got invoking the runbook that we saw before. So what are the benefits of this? First one is using... One, it's not actually a function that you can do with Service Manager. As mentioned before, there is only the only way to do this in Service Manager is to put it outside and then put a link in. You can't actually pull those documents out unless you go into every one and save it. So this is a feature that Service Manager doesn't currently have. So this has gone out and archived your documents while using the Service Manager objects, which is pretty cool. Also, another big thing is the reuse of code. So obviously they're not horribly complex scripts, but you know, they're not simple and you don't want to edit them all the time. If you've got one set of code in one place and you reuse it from every runbook, if I have to change that, I just go there once and I'm done. I don't have to go and change lots of different stuff. Okay, so thanks for that, Justin.
Thanks, man.
All right, so what we want to do now is just give you a quick summary of, you know, what we've covered off today. Service manager and orchestrator working together, you know, we've gone through a lot of complex scenarios there, and your imagination is really the only boundary. You know, there's a number of integration packs available. You can download them online. The majority of them are free. Anything that doesn't have that, orchestrator. And certainly, PowerShell. We use PowerShell a lot, and the run.net script activity is going to give you most of the features that you need within your PowerShell scripts. That absolutely delivers you flexibility. Include your runbooks in your service requests and in other work items if you want to deliver automation. It's really powerful to use the self-service capabilities of Service Manager interfacing with the runbook sitting in Orchestrator to try and save you effort. At the end of the day, we all want to be, you know, sitting back, putting our feet up, enjoying ourselves, not working really, really hard, trying to do all these repetitive manual activities. Think about using Orchestrator to populate your review activities. Now, in the demo, I showed you how we could do that by AD group, but it doesn't have to just be that. What about, you know, Active Directory user title? So we might have a particular review activity that requires our CIO sign-off. All we need to say is the reviewer becomes the CIO. Extremely easy, CIO changes, goes on long service leave, we update the title in AD, all of a sudden the reviewer gets updated as well. We've shown you how to skip review activity. So you can have a review activity in all of your workflows, but you might not necessarily need it, and we can work that out utilizing runbooks based on particular criteria. We've shown you how to pull data from other data sources into the CMDB. Now, that one comes up a lot. There's other third-party software vendors that enable you to do that, but it comes at a cost. Utilizing Orchestrator is quite a simple solution to get that data into your system. Jeff's shown you how to send notifications, and again, sending SMS, that comes up a lot. So being able to do that, and Jeff showed you how you could use an existing user object, but you could just as easily create a class specifically for your on-call users or for your extend your user property to say, how do I want to be notified, email or SMS? Extremely easy. And we've also shown you how to archive those related items that are attached to your work items to a document management system. Again, something a lot of people don't think about, but as soon as that grooming's done in the data warehouse, those attachments are gone. So how to contact us? We didn't get a lot of questions on the Twitter feed, but you know, if you've got questions that you would like to ask us, certainly at the end of the session, but here's our contact details as well. Jeff and I would be more than happy to help you. A lot of the things that we've worked through on this scenario are also available on my blog site as well, which I've put the address up there. Please fill out your evaluations. You're probably sick of hearing it by now as it comes up at the end of every session, but they are important to us. We do take the feedback seriously, so please do that. Chance to win yourself a mouse. And with that, please, any questions? Yep, up the top, sorry. Okay, so the question was, within that second scenario where we had a review activity, when the review activity is completed and the user's been added to the group, does the service request close? And the answer in our scenario there is yes. But you don't. That doesn't necessarily have to be the case. You could have another activity in the runbook that is monitoring the collection to make sure that it's in there. And it'll just sit there waiting until the user hits the collection, and then we could have it close out. Sorry, mate. Automatic feed. Yes, sir.
With the, do you recommend that if you have Orchestrator that you would do all your workflow within that and leave the workflow within Service Manager behind completely?
That's a good question. So the question is, do we recommend that we use Orchestrator for all the workflows as opposed to utilizing the workflows in Service Manager? It's going to give you better performance, absolutely. But there are some things within Orchestrator workflows or in Orchestrator runbooks that you can't do that you can do in the workflows. Particularly like incident might update and it's changing from a value to a value. It's really good for new work items that get created where we're looking for a particular property, but we're not monitoring when something changes from something to something else. So it's a combination of the two. Yeah, but definitely try and reduce the workflows in Service Manager to maximize your performance. Yes?
You had a nice example there of sending SMSs, and that particular example had the username and password in the ROM book.
Yes.
Is there any way to secure that ROM book so that other people who have access to edit ROM books cannot see that script and have access to that sort of private data?
Absolutely. There is a way to I can't think of the commandlet off the top of my head, but there is a commandlet that enables you to secure PowerShell variables. So you can encrypt it within the script. Yeah. Are any other questions? Not at the moment, no. But we are, as both of us work for Data3, we are in the process of coming up with a catalog available of the runbooks, which will be available as products. And then we can offer our services to help you customize them if you need to. So if you send me an email to that, add to the email address on there, I'll definitely get in contact with you to talk about it. Thank you. If that's all the questions, thank you all so much for attending our session. I hope you got something out of it. Please, if you want to come up and have a chat to us about some scenarios afterwards or grab us around, certainly around the conference, we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.